What's your opinion? This is It's Debatable.
Welcome to the second episode of It's Debatable, where every week students from the Department of International Relations at the University of Malta discuss a hot topic from current affairs. I am Alex Bencini, and I'll be your host for the next half hour. Today, our topic for debate deals with the question of Palestinian statehood. Today's guest speaker is Dr. Carmen Zamut, phoning in all the way from Palestine itself. And present in the studios to discuss with us today are Hilary Briffa and Mays Tayan. Israel and Palestine have been at loggerheads over the subject of Palestinian statehood for more than 60 years. Having placed the issue before the UN, Palestine has found that many of the international member states are in fact willing to recognize the state of Palestine, despite Israel's refusal. The USA has agreed to veto Palestinian entry into the Security Council to enable their accession to the UN. This would not only give them the ability to vote and negotiate, but may be able to push Israel into an agreement. Geographically, however, Israel would still maintain its hold over Palestinian territory in the West Bank. Thus, we are here today to discuss whether Palestine's bid to join the UN will, in reality, advance or hinder the peace negotiations with Israel. On the line with us, all the way from Palestine itself, is Dr. Carmen Zamut, who recently hosted a digital video conference on this very issue. Dr. Zamut, in Palestine, you were exposed to this problematic issue firsthand, and we would like to hear your perspective on the UN bid and the implications for both Palestine as well as Israel.
I reached the city of Nablus, in fact, the day after Palestine presented the United Nations bid. This has put the Palestinian question back on the international agenda. In the past decade, efforts to seek peaceful negotiations did not get them anywhere. The Oslo Agreement was supposed to be the first step. Many here say they are worse off than before because it was not then followed up. Peace is a very nice word, a great word, yet I strongly believe that we cannot have peace as long as we have injustice. Israel will never be secure as long as Palestinians are denied their rights. Here, people are still being robbed of their land and of their dignity on a daily basis. A whole population cannot enjoy the liberties enjoyed by citizens of member states. Palestinians cannot embark on a fully fledged democratization and development project unless they belong to a nation. At the moment, they are displaced and isolated in many ways, and I'm going to give you some examples. So from the mountaintops of Nablus, people look at the sea, which is at a close distance. Yet my students here have never seen or have never been to the sea. Palestinians consider Jerusalem as their capital, but many of my students cannot enter Jerusalem. Most of my students here have never been able to travel overseas, and they only experience the world through the media. The reason for this is the infamous wall that surrounds the West Bank. This wall confines people in an open prison where their mobility is greatly restricted. To go in and out of the West Bank, you have to pass checkpoints. On a good day, this means that a trip from one town to a neighboring place is made very difficult. A journey, which would not take more than 30 minutes, will take 2 to 3 hours because one has to go all the way to the few crossings. On a difficult day, people queue for hours before they are allowed to pass. At checkpoints, they are herded like sheep. They pass through very narrow passages and several turnstiles. Until recently, Palestinians of all ages waited for hours, even in bitter cold and rain. They did not even have toilet facilities. Ambulances carrying patients in need of urgent hospitalization cannot bypass the checkpoint. They have to wait and wait until it is their turn. Last week in East Jerusalem, I was listening to the Israeli journalist Gideon Levy, a harsh critic of Zionism. He explained how the Israeli press does not cover the occupation properly. It gives people the impression that Israelis have a higher moral ground and they champion democratic practice. One of the ways people can live with themselves, he claimed, is the lack of visibility and awareness about what takes place in the occupied territories. During their obligatory conscription, young Israeli men and women go through a process where they are taught how to dehumanize and fear Palestinians. The dehumanization is very real. People have not been have not only been divested of their land, but also of their dignity. Most of my students here are between 18 and 21 years of age. They have lost a good part of their early education during the Intifada, when Nablus was isolated by soldiers and it was split into parts. It was far too dangerous for any of them to attend schools. University students and professors had to live in hotels or makeshift dormitories. During those years, at nighttime, shops turned into sleeping quarters for 7 or 8 students per room, who lived away from their families in very poor conditions. Some of the students who were arrested at that time are still held under arrest. Last month, during the olive harvest, I was out in the villages talking to women. At one point, one woman revealed that her son and his friend were arraigned on their way to Al-Quds University 8 years ago. He was sentenced 20 years in prison. Inshallah, he will be included in the next prisoner release, she hoped. This was negotiated when the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit was released in Gaza in October. Many of my students experienced traumas. I was in the schoolyard with my best friend, and I suddenly saw her lying in a pool of blood. She was shot by a Jewish settler, explained one of my students from the Faculty of Medicine. Settlements are the biggest contentious point. The West Bank is like a Swiss cheese, full of big holes in it. Israel attempts to attract Jews from all over the world, and these are allowed to set up home on Palestinian land. This process is so fast that in a few years' time, it is going to be impossible for Palestinians to declare an independent state because there are too many settlers on their land. Typical Jewish settlements first appear when caravans are strategically placed on hilltops. These then turn into building sites that spread on the hillsides, displacing Palestinians and usurping their land. Settlers, supported by the state, are militant and they harass Palestinians on a daily basis. Land is systematically confiscated, denying farmers of their olive groves and access to water tanks. The Israeli scholar Ilan Pape describes this process as ethnic cleansing. Such efforts are very evident in Hebron and also in every other town and village across the West Bank. The Palestinian struggle continues on a day-to-day basis. Only 2 weeks ago, one of my students came to class with a plastered leg. For a second, I almost forgot I was here, and I asked the question I would ask a Moti student. Oh, did you injure yourself in football? I asked. No, he answered. And an Israeli soldier shot a gas canister at my foot. I now have 3 pins in my leg, and I am not sure I will be able to walk again. I was surprised at how composed he looked. He explained he was hit during a demonstration demanding the reopening of a gate that has been separating 2 villages for 9 years. This is normal for us, he explained. Truly, the incredible gives a sense of normality in this area. Away from the glare of the television cameras and the attention of global media, there exists a silent but resilient struggle by Palestinians. But others are evidently tired and resigned. I heard the sad story of an old villager who offered his services to a Jewish settler for the meager wage of 10 euros per day, merely to be able to tend to the trees in his ancestral land that was brutally usurped from him. There does not seem to be a light at the end of this tunnel. Why would Israel change its current policy when it is not paying a price for the occupation? A third intifada is unlikely. Palestinians now seem exhausted by the effort and the bloodshed of their previous 2 uprisings. They also know that theirs is indeed a David and Goliath struggle. They are fighting the 4th biggest military power in the world, which is supported by the world's biggest superpower, the United States. Some organizations point out that international sanctions are a way in which pressure could be exerted on Israel. Sanctions brought down apartheid in South Africa. Yet there is no international consensus on this. I have to add that the recent peaceful Palestinian initiatives in the United Nations were severely punished. Just when Abu Mazen addressed the United Nations and the day after Palestine was accepted as a member of UNESCO, Israel announced the construction of 2 big new settlements in East Jerusalem. Jerusalem is one of the sorest points. Permitting the construction of more settlements there deeply hurts the Palestinian cause. As I walked the narrow streets of Old Jerusalem, I could feel the oppressive tensions, There, pilgrims of the three main religions gather to celebrate their creeds. Heavily armed soldiers look on. I do not think I will sound too irreverent by saying that to me, the sacred place is one of the most unholy places that I have been to. There is now no fighting in this region, but there is no peace either. Peace cannot be achieved before Palestinians regain their full human dignity, and as long as the occupation lasts, Israel itself will not be secure. At the moment, there are few people in Israel who argue that the biggest threat to Israelis is Zionism. Most of the Israelis who advocate this view are now living overseas. Nonetheless, who would have guessed that white supremacy would end in South Africa or that the Iron Curtain would be lifted in Eastern Europe? Yes, miracles do happen. I just hope that one big divine intervention happens in this so-called Holy Land.
Now, to start off our debate, we have two students of BA Honours International Relations, Hilary Briffer, who is Maltese, and Maize Tayem, who is actually Palestinian herself. Hilary, let us begin with you. After several decades of peace talks, do you think this UN bid will actually make a difference on the table?
Unfortunately not. I think that the United Nations may vote, but this will not change anything in tangible terms. At the end of the day, even if a vote passes in the Security Council or the UN General Assembly, the UN have no means of forcibly implementing what the Palestinians desire. Their wish for true statehood, defined borders, economic viability, and a sustainable quality of life for the people cannot be achieved by signing a piece of paper in the UN. Change must take place at ground level.
I have to disagree here. It is true that the bid for statehood does not change anything on the ground, but it does in the international arena. Going to the United Nations marks a change in strategy than the previous bipartisan negotiation that thus has been fruitless and failed to bring about a Palestinian state and achieve stability in the disturbed region. The bid itself is step one in a multi-pronged strategy to accomplish a national achievement. Although the bid for Palestinian statehood was rejected by the United Nations Security Council early last November, the leadership hopes that winning a vote in the General Assembly will give more recourse to international organizations. Actually, the day after Abu Mazen's address to the United Nations, UNESCO has strongly voted to admit Palestine. 107 members were in favor.
What do you have to say to that, Hilary?
Well, it's true, as my colleague said, that this presents a change in approach. However, I still feel that the UN bid actually undermines the bilateral talks between Palestine and Israel. President Mahmoud Abbas is pushing for full Palestinian membership in the UN. Seeking change in this manner is actually counterproductive to peace, as this can only be achieved by way of direct negotiations carried out between Israel and Palestine themselves, and not as a result of UN interference. The two parties must strive to achieve a workable peace agreement, and the UN must not intervene, as, at the end of the day, questions about borders and Palestine statehood can only really be determined by an agreement between the two. Even the American ambassador to the United Nations has admitted that Palestine's actions regarding the UN will complicate the situation rather than improve the state of affairs. The Israelis and Palestinians are the ones who will be living beside one another, and it is they who must solve their issues and reach a compromise on issues such as borders, refugees, security, and of course Jerusalem.
Do you feel this is the case, Maize?
No. I'm convinced that the bid for statehood will change the foundation and the ground rules in the prolonged negotiations conducted between Palestine and Israel. For the past 20 years, mostly what we saw was the American-sponsored peace process, much in favor of Israel and which was slowly leading to nowhere, whilst Israel continued to carry on with its expansionist agenda against all international rules and using the negotiations as a tool to sustain the status quo. Now it is the chance to break the status quo and impasse, to bring new light and create international pressure on Israel to force final negotiations to the two-state solutions based on UN General Assembly Resolution 181 and upon which Israel declared itself an independent sovereign state.
Thank you, Maize and Hilary. You both raised some very interesting points. We'll have to stop here for a short break. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Dr. Carmen Zamut.
Tea, my dear, I like my toy. can come back here to make a man. It takes more than a license for a gun. Confront your enemies, avoid them when you can. A gentleman will walk but never run. The manners make of manners, someone said. He's a hero of the day. It takes a man to suffer ignorance and smile. Be yourself, no matter what they say. Be yourself, no matter what they say. Be yourself, no matter what they say. Be yourself, no matter what they say.
I'm legal alien, I'm a sick flesh,
no matter what they say.
Welcome back to this episode of It's Debatable, a platform for discussion for the students at the University of Malta. Today we're discussing whether Palestine's bid to become a full member of the UN will have a positive impact on peace talks with Israel or not.
The following is an audio clip of the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu at the United Nations General Assembly on 23rd September 2011.
We must stop Iran before it's too late. If Iran is not stopped, we will all face the specter of nuclear terrorism. And the Arab Spring could soon become an Iranian winter. That would be a tragedy. Millions of Arabs have taken to the streets to replace tyranny with liberty. And no one would benefit more than Israel if those committed to freedom and peace would prevail. This is my fervent hope. But as the Prime Minister of Israel, I cannot risk the future of the Jewish state on wishful thinking. Leaders must see reality as it is, not as it ought to be. We must do our best to shape the future, but we cannot wish away the dangers of the present. And the world around Israel is definitely becoming more dangerous. Militant Islam has already taken over Lebanon and Gaza. It's determined to tear apart the peace treaties between Israel and Egypt and between Israel and Jordan. It's poisoned many Arab minds against Jews in Israel, against America and the West. It opposes not the policies of Israel, but the existence of Israel. Now, some argue that the spread of militant Islam, especially in these turbulent times, if you want to slow it down, they argue, Israel must hurry to make concessions, to make territorial compromises. And this theory sounds simple. Basically, it goes like this. Leave the territory and peace will be advanced. The moderates will be strengthened, the radicals will be kept at bay, and don't worry about the pesky details of how Israel will actually defend itself. International troops will do the job. These people say to me constantly, just make a sweeping offer and everything will work out. You know, there's only one problem with that theory. We've tried it. And it hasn't worked. In 2000, Israel made a sweeping peace offer that met virtually all of the Palestinian demands. Arafat rejected it. The Palestinians then launched a terror attack that claimed 1,000 Israeli lives. Prime Minister Olmert afterwards made an even more sweeping offer in 2008. President Abbas didn't even respond to it. But Israel did more than just make sweeping offers. We actually left territory. We withdrew from Lebanon in 2000 and from every square inch of Gaza in 2005. That didn't calm the Islamic storm, the militant Islamic storm that threatens us. It only brought the storm closer and made it stronger.
To our debate now. Mays, many of the previous campaigns over this issue have been coloured by violence. Do you think that is a positive sign that the Palestinians are seeking non-violent diplomacy by way of the UN this time?
Absolutely. I believe that Palestine's bid for statehood exemplifies non-violent diplomacy in every way. What is worth mentioning here is that the Palestinian leader pushing for UN action is Prime Minister Salam Fayyad, who is not only a moderate, but whose forces work every day with the Israeli army and security agencies to prevent violence and terrorism. Moreover, on several occasions, President Mahmoud Abbas extended his hands to the Israeli government and the Israeli people for peacemaking and building cooperative relations between the states of Palestine and Israel. Negotiations under the previous terms were just prolonging negotiations. The terms of reference were created and accepted by Israel before they even began. The inflexibility of the Israeli government left Palestine no choice but to resort to the United Nations, a step which Israel and the United States criticized as undermining the peace process. Ironically, in 1947, Israel went to the United Nations for the same reasons Palestinians did.
If I may interrupt here, I'd like to point out how historically we have seen the solutions of Northern Ireland and even Sudan, where it was the negotiations between the respective parties that enabled the establishment of independence and not outside forces. I must keep stressing that this is what Palestine needs. You mentioned the inflexibility of the Israeli government, yet one of the critical factors hindering successful negotiations is Palestine's refusal to accept Israel as a Jewish state. Perhaps if Palestine first concedes to this, then Israel would have satisfied one of the major prerequisites for negotiation, and in all likelihood would acquiesce to starting peace talks again.
You must admit that speculation, though. With all due respect, one cannot draw a comparison with Northern Ireland and Sudan, as the specifics of the situation differ. According to the World Bank, the IMF, and other UN organizations, Palestine can assume the responsibility of a middle-income country and has been already recognized by over 120 countries, that's two-thirds of the UN General Assembly members. Thus, going to the UN seems like the logical next step in the process, the only forum to achieve recognition. For if the state doesn't come bilaterally, it should come multilaterally.
Multilateral recognition at the expense of bilateral recognition would not dissolve tension with Israel. Even the bid for multilateral recognition itself is problematic. The UN recognizes the Palestinian Liberation Authority as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people, but the UN bid was put in by the Palestinian National Authority, not the PLO. This is the administrative authority entrusted with governing the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Since they are the ones pushing for unilateral recognition of Palestinian statehood, many Palestinians have expressed concern that their rights may not be properly respected. If the UN agrees to the establishment of the Palestinian state, then in all likelihood an unelected member of the PA may sit in the General Assembly and not a member of the PLO, who actually have the observer seat in the UN. From a long-term perspective, this could be harmful to Palestinian rights, as the PLO would be representing all Palestinians, whilst the PA just its people in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Therefore, recognition of a Palestinian state through the PA and not the PLO may reduce the right to self-determination. Overall, therefore, I'd like to conclude by referring back to my basic premise. Palestinian statehood will not be peacefully achieved unless agreements take place directly between Israel and Palestine, and Israel and Palestine alone.
Thank you, Hilary and Mays. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. On behalf of the team behind It's Debatable, I'd like to thank our phone-in guest, Dr. Carmen Zamut. I would also like to thank our radio technician, Mr. Kenneth Mitzi. I do hope you enjoyed today's program. I am Alex Bencini, and on behalf of the Department of International Relations and the Malta International Relations Student Association, I thank you for tuning in and hope you will join us next week. Until then, keep updated.
You have just had the pleasure of listening to another student-run episode of It's Debatable, produced by the Department of International Relations within the Faculty of Arts at the University of Malta. For more information, kindly visit mrsa.org.mt. Tune in next week, same time, same frequency.